Chapter 1. Declutter. Do you often feel stuck or overwhelmed? Do you wish you could experience more peace of mind in your everyday life? This is because your mind is cluttered. It is likely filled with unfinished business, unnecessary worries, unproductive tasks, needless distractions, and/or ill-defined goals. In short, instead of being focused, your mind is scattered, and the constant friction you experience every day leaves you feeling unfocused, stressed, and exhausted. In this section, you'll learn how to declutter your mind and your environment so that you can move toward your goals freely and effortlessly. A. Reconnect with the present. Do you worry too much? Do you have significant problems you can't stop focusing on? If so, these problems are likely to destroy your peace of mind and make your life harder than it needs to be. The reason you worry too much is that you spend too much time focusing on things you cannot change. You dwell on your past without being able to do anything about it. Or you worry about your future, wondering if everything is going to be okay. To reduce your worries, you must learn to live in the present. You can only live one day, 1 hour, 1 minute, 1 second at a time. Yesterday is gone. You did what you could, so let go of the past and move forward. Tomorrow hasn't yet come. You'll deal with whatever happens when it arrives. But for now, the only thing you have to focus on is this moment, right now. Before we continue, let's complete a simple exercise. Spend a couple of minutes reflecting on the fact that this moment is the only thing that is and ever will be real. Don't think. Feel the present moment. Become aware of all your senses. Notice how your body feels. Hear all the sounds. Observe the room you're in and look for things you've never noticed before. Now, realize that your past is no more. It exists only as a memory you recall in the present moment. Meditate on that for a while. Your past is gone, forever. Also, notice that whatever you refer to as your past is largely the result of your selected focus and personal interpretation of past events. Every day, you recreate your past by recalling memories and interpreting them in a particular way. Similarly, realize that the future is a construction of the mind. Tomorrow is a concept, not a reality. You can only experience the present moment. Therefore, the only way you can ever change your future is through the actions you take in the present moment. No matter how much you worry about tomorrow, worry of itself won't change anything. It will only disturb your peace of mind and hamper your ability to act in the best way possible. That's the end of the meditation. How do you feel now? Do you feel lighter and more grounded? Here's the bottom line. You don't need to carry the weight of your past or the responsibility of your future all the time. You can let go and realize that all you have to do is complete one task at a time. Doing your best in the present moment is enough. In fact, it's the only thing you can ever do. The present moment offers an infinity of possibilities. The present moment opens the door to boundless opportunities for change. Have you ever noticed how many actions are available to you at any given time? Each passing second offers us the chance to make a different decision, which could alter the course of our entire lives. For instance, on average, we make 35,000 decisions each day. Now ask yourself, how many new decisions do you really need to make to improve your life? Not that many. In fact, a few daily habits that you stick to over the long term have the power to transform your life over the coming months and years. If you don't believe me, I challenge you to implement a few daily habits and see what happens. In my book, Habits That Stick, I offer a list of 7 powerful daily habits. They are, number 1, setting daily goals. In my experience, daily goal setting will increase your productivity dramatically. To set your goals, simply take a pen and a sheet of paper and make a list of 3 to 5 tasks you want to accomplish during the upcoming day. Then, prioritize your tasks by numbering them in order of importance. Start working on your most important task until you complete it. Then, and only then, move on to the next one. Repeat the process to the end of the list. Do the same thing every day. Number 2, reading your goals every day. This is a powerful way to ensure that you stay on track with all of your goals. When things get busy, it's easy to forget about your goals, but reading them aloud on a daily basis can prevent this from happening. Number 3, meditating. Meditation provides a huge number of benefits. You can begin by spending just a few minutes each day. There are many ways to meditate, but it can be as simple as closing your eyes and focusing on your breathing pattern. Number 4, practicing gratitude. Forgetting to express gratitude is a major cause of unhappiness. People tend to take everything for granted and fail to appreciate fully the little things in life, or even the big ones. Practicing daily gratitude will enhance your mood and boost your motivation. For more details, refer to the upcoming section, Practice Daily Gratitude. Number 5, consuming motivational content. Feeding your mind with inspirational material on a daily basis will help you stay motivated for the long haul. If you can't find the time to read, you can try listening to uplifting audiobooks. Number 6, self-reflection. Taking a few minutes to reflect upon your day is a very effective way to improve yourself. When you analyze the events of your day, consider asking yourself the following questions. What did I do well today? What could I have done better? What can I learn from today? What will I do differently in the future? Number 7, exercising daily. These days, many people spend too much time sitting and looking at their televisions or computers. Daily exercise will not only improve your physical health, but also enhance your mood. Remember, exercise is a powerful antidepressant. Each of these 7 daily habits helps create momentum and can dramatically increase your well-being, confidence, and productivity. It's not far-fetched to say that a few decisions you choose to make every day are enough to turn your life around. What single beneficial daily habit could you implement in your life starting today? Trusting your future you. Like most people, you probably worry about the future and are desperately trying to place yourself there in your mind. I suggest this is nothing but total insanity. You can never be somewhere else other than in the now. Sure, you can visualize your future to help you take better action in the present, but this is not what I'm talking about. Here, I'm talking about your attempt to change your future by worrying about it. This comes from the false belief that by doing so, you can alter your future. Unfortunately, this is not how things work. Merely worrying about tomorrow's presentation isn't going to be of much help unless you actually do something in the present to ease your concerns. Instead, I invite you to trust your future self. Your past self was able to overcome many challenges, so why worry about future problems now? Why not leave the responsibility of the future to your future self and trust that he or she will deal with those challenges effectively? Imagine how you'd feel if you could trust your future self entirely and allow him or her to lift the heavy burden from your shoulders. How great would that be? Exercise. Transfer responsibilities to your future self. As we have discussed, your present self can only deal with the present. The only person that can deal with your future is your future self. It is his or her responsibility to do this, not yours. Using your action guide, work through the 4-step process below. 1. Take a few deep breaths and relax. 2. Remember the accomplishments and challenges you've overcome in the past. You've been able to survive up until now, and your future self will do just fine. 3. Imagine yourself transferring all your worries about your future to your future self. Feel yourself become lighter and more present. 4. Refocus on what you can do today. And only on that. B. Sort out your worries. Let me show you how much time we waste in worrying about the wrong problems. Here is a reliable estimate of things people worry about. Things that never happen, 40%. Things that are over and past and that can never be changed by all the worry in the world, 30%. Needless worries about our health, 12%. Petty miscellaneous worries, 10%. Real, legitimate worries, 8%. In short, 92% of the average person's worries take up valuable time, cause painful stress, even mental anguish, and are absolutely unnecessary. Earl Nightingale, motivational speaker. We all worry too much. If you take a close look at what you worry about, you'll notice that you tend to worry about the same things over and over. It could be your financial situation, your relationships, or your career. In most cases, however, worrying is a complete waste of time. It kills your peace of mind and creates unnecessary suffering in your life. When you allow too many worries to inhabit your mind, you can easily feel overwhelmed. It is possible to sort worries into the following three major categories. A. Worries about things over which you have control. B. Worries about things over which you have some kind of control. And C. Worries about things over which you have no control. When you learn to deal with your worries based on these three categories, you will start seeing things clearly, and you'll be able to eliminate or lessen many of your concerns. Now, let's review each of the categories in turn. A. Things over which you have control. In this world, there are things you have direct control over. These are the things you can take action on. For instance, you can choose to watch TV or work on your side business. Confront someone or say nothing. Face your fears or run away. Prepare in advance or cram for an exam. Or blame other people or take responsibility. You have the power to determine the way you react to any event that happens to you. Thus, for each aspect of your life you do have control over, it's important for you to take the appropriate action instead of merely reacting to your environment. You often have far more power to change your situation than you believe. To reduce your worries about things within your control, 1. Recognize you do have control over them. 2. Identify what you can do. And 3. Take action. What worries could you reduce if you were to take responsibility for them? B. Things you have some kind of control over. There are also some things you have only partial control over. For instance, you can't be sure that you'll win your tennis match, but you do have some control over the outcome. By practicing beforehand or working with a coach, you can improve your performance and increase your chance of winning. Similarly, you can't know for sure whether your date will like you. However, by working on yourself, reading relationship books, or hiring a dating coach, you'll become more confident and will increase the chances that your prospective partner will like you. The point is, you can influence the outcome of many situations by taking appropriate actions, such as preparing beforehand or adopting a more positive attitude in the face of adversity. Consequently, rather than worrying about the outcome of a future event, focus on what you can do right now to increase the chances of things turning out well. In short, identify what you have control over and do the best you can. Then, let go of your need to control anything else. For more details, refer to the upcoming section, Right Action versus Right Result. C. Things over which you have no control. There are also many things you have no control over. Yet, chances are you keep worrying about these things anyway. For instance, you can't control the weather, but you will likely get upset if it rains on the day you plan to have a picnic. You can't control your past, but you may spend a lot of time dwelling on it. You can't control your future, but you may waste a lot of time and energy worrying about it. Here are some examples of things you have no control over. Your past. Your future. Natural disasters, wars, and other world events. The weather. And most of the things happening around you, for example, traffic jams, people who don't arrive at a meeting on time, etc. In fact, if you examine all the things you worry about, you'll realize that, in most cases, there's absolutely nothing you can do about them. Now, let's do a simple exercise to help you reduce many of your worries. Exercise: Sorting out your worries. Take a piece of paper or refer to the corresponding section of your action guide. Create 4 columns and add the following titles: Things I Worry About, C/SC/NC, which is short for Control, Some Control, and No Control, How It Benefits Me, and What I Can Do About It. In the first column, write all the things you worry about, whether they're small or large. For instance, you could be worrying about your job, your financial situation, or the fact you have yet to meet the right partner. Or you could be dwelling on certain events that happened in the past. In the second column, write whether you have total control, C, some control, SC, or no control, NC, over the situation. In the third column, write down how worrying benefits you. Does it help you in any way, or is it just pointless? Finally, in the last column, write down what remedial action you could take to ease the situation. Could you decide to stop focusing on it and let it go? Could you take action to lessen the worry? Could you ask someone for advice? As you work through this exercise, you'll realize that most of the things you worry about are things you have little or no control over. This is the error most people make. They dwell on a past they can't change, worry about a future that doesn't exist yet, or keep complaining about things they have no power to affect. Now, how much of your worries actually make sense, and how are you going to make them disappear? I would argue that in most situations, you only ever have three choices. 1. Do something about it. 2. Accept it. Or 3. Worry or complain about it. Most people exert a great deal of energy complaining about what is happening to them. However, no matter how tempting it may be, complaining does not help. Instead, it robs you of your power to take action. Notice that the more you complain about something, the less action you tend to take. Whenever something is worrying you, ask yourself what you're going to do about it. Will you do something about it, accept it, or complain about it? The choice is yours. Bonus exercise. To go further, I encourage you to undertake a 7-day zero complaint challenge. For the next 7 days, avoid complaining out loud or in your head as much as possible. As you do so, you'll realize that complaining is often your way to avoid taking constructive action. Complaining is the easy way out, which is why most people indulge in it. To help you with this challenge, put a rubber band around your wrist and snap it each time you catch yourself complaining. C. Close open loops. Do you suffer from chronic distraction? Do you feel overwhelmed? Are you stuck and unable to move forward? At the beginning of this book, I've invited you to complete one task you'd been putting off. Let's talk about this in more depth. At any point in time, you have a list of things you want to do in your mind. Let's call it your mind's to-do list. You might not be aware of the number of tasks that have been accumulating, but these tasks tend to do nothing but weigh you down. When you accumulate too many unfinished tasks, you may feel stuck and unable to make progress the way you'd like to. Often, you may not even know why you feel stuck. Whenever you experience difficulty in completing your tasks, it's usually a sign that you need to declutter your mind. While your mind is amazing at processing information, keeping everything in your head is not the best way to deal with your worries or problems. The simple act of writing things down will help you think things through and force you to clarify your thinking. Instead of having an abstract problem in your mind, by writing it down, you'll have something tangible to work on. Thus, pen and paper are fantastic tools that will help to organize your thoughts and work your problems through. Exercise. Close open loops. Create a list of all the tasks present in the back of your mind, whether they be significant or otherwise. You might want to go one step further and organize your list into categories. For instance, you could divide your list using categories such as administrative tasks, daily chores, work-related duties, and so on. Then, schedule time to complete these tasks. You can set an entire day to get rid of all the tasks you've been putting off. Or perhaps you can set an entire week to complete a project. Do whatever works best for you. Remember, anything you haven't scheduled or completed will take up some of your mental resources, and allowing too many incomplete tasks to accumulate can leave you overwhelmed and stressed. Clear your mind, and you will increase your capacity to feel more motivated. D. Free up your schedule. Are you spending too much time on unimportant things? If so, you might need to free up your schedule. Having too many tasks to complete every day may overwhelm you and can leave you tired and unmotivated. Imagine you had to eliminate 80% of your daily activities. Which tasks would you choose to remove? Which tasks would you delegate? Who would you say no to? To take control of your day, it is essential you become ruthless with the way you utilize your time. If billionaires like Bill Gates schedule their appointments in 5-minute increments, they have a good reason for doing so. As a rule of thumb, the more you respect your time, the more productive you will become. Conversely, the more you give your time freely to whoever asks for it, the more overwhelmed you will feel and the less you are likely to accomplish. Let's see how you can declutter your schedule by learning to say no and by removing unnecessary tasks from your schedule. Why you struggle to say no. Saying no to other people's requests is not easy. In fact, there are quite a few reasons why you may have difficulty doing this. Let's review some of them. A. Lack of clarity. One reason you may have a hard time saying no is because you lack a clear vision. You don't know what you want or where you're heading, and as a result, it's easy to become distracted. Of course, you're not always in a position to say no at work or in your personal life. However, remember this. As a rule of thumb, the clearer you are regarding what matters to you, such as your goals and values, the easier it will be for you to make the correct decisions and say no when necessary. Successful people have to decline requests most of the time. And this is one of the reasons they're so successful. They have clear priorities, well-defined values, and a specific vision. The following story of Richard Branson, the billionaire founder of Virgin, illustrates this situation very well. A company that wanted to hire Richard Branson as a keynote speaker offered to pay $100,000 for an hour-long speech, but he declined. They raised their offer to $250,000, but again he declined. Then $500,000, but still no. Finally, they offered to pay whatever price he named. Despite this lucrative offer, they received the following message from his office. No amount of money would matter. Right now, Richard has three strategic priorities he is focused on, and he will only allow us to allocate his calendar to something that significantly contributes to the accomplishment of one of those three priorities, and speaking for a fee is not one of them. As you can see, Richard Branson knows exactly what he's doing and where he's going, and he will let nothing prevent him from concentrating on his top priorities. Now, unlike Richard Branson, you're probably not receiving hundreds of requests every day. But how are you going to design the life you want and achieve the success you desire if you're unable to say no? And what will happen as you become more and more successful in the future? If you can't say no now, how will you say no in the future? B. Lack of assertiveness. Another reason you may have had a hard time declining requests is because you're afraid of hurting other people's feelings. Like most people, you probably want everybody to like you. While understandable, this type of behavior will rarely allow you to perform at your best or design the life you want. You may lie to yourself, pretending you're acting selflessly, but it's often not the case. In fact, if anything, being a people pleaser is a selfish action, not a selfless one. When you seek to please people, you act out of fear of not being loved. Consequently, the focus is on yourself and what people may think of you, not on the other person. This is why Mr. Nice Guy often finishes last. Instead of being himself, he wears a mask, hoping to make a good impression. He hides his true personality for fear of being rejected. In the end, he often is rejected. Ironically, not for who he really is, but for who he pretends to be. Even worse, in the long term, this type of behavior tends to create resentment toward people who abuse your kindness. Under this condition, instead of having real relationships with people, you will develop fake relationships based on resentment and fear of showing your true self. This lack of assertiveness and the tendency to please other people often result from insufficient self-worth. For instance, a lack of self-worth can prevent you standing for your values and what you believe in, accepting that some people will not like you, valuing your time and yourself, setting expectations and clear boundaries, and deciding on a clear direction you want to follow. C. Lack of understanding of what saying yes means. Whenever you say yes to something, you'll probably have to say no to something else. For instance, when you help someone do something of little importance, you lose the opportunity to work on something of greater import, something that may have a bigger impact on the world. In short, saying yes too often can rob you of the opportunity to do something more meaningful and impactful with your time. In this regard, it is easy to see why saying yes is selfish. Contrary to what people think, saying yes is not the default answer. Saying no is. Remember this, nobody is entitled to your time. When someone asks you to give them some of your time, they assume they know what's best for you and how you should use your time. Or worse, they simply don't care about your time and they're only considering their own interests. Isn't that selfish? The point is, whenever you offer your time, you give away a chunk of your life, and time is a hugely valuable commodity. Is it worth your time? Shouldn't you spend your time doing something you judge more important? Don't get me wrong, though. I'm not saying you should be a jerk and never help other people. The truth is, we usually love helping others. The helper feels good about sharing his or her knowledge, while the person asking for help is happy to find some. I'm merely encouraging you to become more selective in the way you use your time. Help people whenever you can, but don't feel obligated to do so every time. Exercise. Identify why you're not saying no. Complete the corresponding table in your action guide. In the first column, write down all the things you've been saying yes to in the past 30 days. Don't worry if you can't remember every instance. In the second column, write down Y if you wanted to say yes and N if you wanted to say no. In the third column, for each request you wanted to decline, write down why you felt you couldn't say no. This will give you a better idea of the things you need to work on. Now, let's have a look at some of the things you can do to assert yourself and say no more often. How to say no. Many people struggle to assert themselves or ask for what they want. As a result, instead of being proactive and going after their dreams, these people tend to react to what life throws at them. If this sounds like you, it's now time to assert yourself and go after what you want. A. Start small. If you struggle to say no, I encourage you to start small. Start by saying no to small requests with minor consequences. Perhaps you can say no to attending a party you've been invited to. Perhaps you can say no to someone who asks you for a small favor. At first, it might feel uncomfortable, but it's a good sign you're making progress. People are not going to die because you say no to them. B. Stop over-justifying yourself. Do you try to justify yourself whenever you choose to say no to a request? I see people doing this all the time. Here's the thing. You don't need to justify yourself. Remember what we discussed previously. When people ask you something, your default answer should be no. Therefore, you don't need to come up with false excuses nobody would ever buy into. Instead, try telling the truth. I'm sorry, but parties are not my thing, so I'm going to skip it this time. I'm sorry, but right now I'm entirely focused on a very important project. I'm sorry, but I made a promise to my kids, and I won't disappoint them. You don't need to over-apologize either. Time is one of your most precious assets, so why squander it? Why not value your time more and say no to requests that aren't the best use of your time? At first, it might feel uncomfortable to say no without offering lame excuses, but I encourage you to try it out. If you find it difficult to assert yourself, this exercise or action will help you immensely. C. Practice saying no. If you struggle to say no, an effective way to work on your assertiveness is to use role play. Role playing has been shown to be effective in many different fields, especially sales. Anything you practice saying by yourself, or better, with someone else, becomes easier to say in real life. To practice, envision a specific situation when you want to say no. Perhaps it's when one of your colleagues asks you for a favor, or perhaps it's when a friend wants you to attend a party. Now, imagine what you would say in this specific situation. See yourself actually saying it. Practice saying it out loud. The simple fact of having rehearsed your answer in your mind will help you when the situation arises in reality. D. Practice offering alternatives. Rather than saying no, you can also offer alternatives when necessary. I find this method effective when I don't want to say no, can't say no, or simply want to modify the request so it works better for me. For instance, let's say someone asks you to attend a party and you don't want to go. You could say something like, "I don't feel like going tonight, but we can have lunch together tomorrow if you're free." Of course, that's providing you actually do want to meet that person. This alternative may come in handy, especially if you're an introvert. Removing tasks you do reluctantly. To declutter your schedule and reduce stress, it is also essential for you to remove tasks you do reluctantly during the day. These are often the tasks that generate the most stress. If they're part of your job, you might not be able to remove all of them, but you can probably eliminate at least a few. As you do so, you'll make your day easier and will have more time and energy to dedicate to things that truly matter to you. Exercises. Eliminate unpleasant tasks. Create the following table in your action guide. In the first column, write down all the unpleasant tasks you have to perform or undertake on a regular basis. Revisit your day mentally. It will help you make sure you don't forget anything. If it helps, ask yourself, if I were to eliminate some tasks, which ones could increase my peace of mind and boost my mood most dramatically? In the second column, write down what you could do about it. For instance, you might be able to delegate the task in some way, spend less time doing it, or eliminate it altogether. You could choose to give it an empowering meaning. Perhaps you can see this as a way to strengthen your self-discipline. E. Declutter your desk. A messy desk can often be the result of a cluttered mind. One thing you can do when you feel stuck or tend to procrastinate is to start cleaning your work environment. This is what I like to do, and it usually works for me. When you start working, remove anything you don't need from your desk. Eliminate anything that could distract you. Turn off the notifications on your phone. Remove any file you don't need right now, and only keep what you actually need. For me, in most cases, it would mean having only my computer on my desk and nothing else. Also, note that getting into the habit of cleaning your desk before you start work is a great way to prime your mind and let it know now it's time for action. Exercise. Declutter your desk. Remove anything unnecessary on your desk, such as files you don't need right now, your smartphone, etc. F. Declutter your physical environment. A cluttered environment can be the result of a cluttered mind. Clutter is not just about having a messy room, it's about having too many unnecessary things that neither serve you nor bring you joy. These things clutter your mind and impact you in subtle ways. They can become distractions that prevent you from thinking straight and facing your own problems. In her book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, Marie Kondo explains how her clients often dramatically change their life after decluttering their house. Here are two of her student reviews. After your course, I quit my job and launched my own business, doing something I had dreamed of doing ever since I was a child. Your course taught me to see what I really need and what I don't. So I got a divorce. Now I feel much happier. Here's the bottom line. There is a connection between physical clutter and mental confusion. Physical clutter might be a way for you to hide your feelings and avoid facing certain things in your life. As you get rid of what you don't need, you can often gain clarity regarding what you really do want and need. The opposite can also be true. Mental clutter might actually produce physical clutter. Decluttering your environment means getting rid of everything you don't need, keeping only the things that bring you joy. This requires you to remove unnecessary things from your life, not just by putting them in a drawer or in a storage facility. This act of decluttering is a one-time deed, a commitment to removing everything that isn't serving you in your life. In a nutshell, here's how to declutter your environment. Sort out your possessions by categories. Marie Kondo recommends you sort out your possession in the following order: clothes, books, papers, miscellany, and items with sentimental value. Gather all the items in each category. Start with your clothes. Gather all of them on the floor of one of your rooms. Then hold each item in your hand and ask yourself whether you really want to keep them. Imagine you see this item in a store today. Would you buy it again? Books. Hold them in your hand one by one and see how each one makes you feel. Would you love seeing the book you hold in your hand on your bookshelves every day? If not, you might want to get rid of it. If you have unread books, you probably want to sell or donate them unless you're excited at the prospect of reading them. But remember, if you really wanted to read them, you would already have done so, yes? Also, you can always buy a new copy later if you feel the urge to read it. Papers. The rule of thumb is to discard everything. After all, papers will seldom, if ever, bring you joy, right? Marie Kondo recommends you only keep papers that fall into one of the following three categories: papers currently in use, papers needed for a limited period of time, and papers that must be retained indefinitely. Note that this category doesn't include papers with sentimental value, such as letters. Miscellaneous items. This category includes anything else in your house except items with sentimental value. This could include CDs, electrical equipment, accessories, etc. Divide the items in this category into main subcategories that make sense to you. Then take each item in your hand and decide whether you want to throw it away or keep it. Again, make sure you get rid of anything that doesn't actively bring you joy. Items with sentimental value. Throwing away items with sentimental value might be challenging, but it is a wonderful opportunity to reflect on your past and let it go, so that you can open yourself up to new opportunities. As Marie Kondo beautifully puts it, it is not our memories, but the person we've become because of those past experiences that we should treasure. So don't be afraid to let go of any item that keeps you stuck in the past. Many of these objects have already played their role. Unless you absolutely need them to move forward, let go of them. Throw away or donate items you don't need anymore. Put every item that you don't want to keep in bags and throw them away. You can also sell them or donate them. If you have difficulty discarding certain items, especially those with sentimental value, ask yourself, am I having trouble getting rid of this because of an attachment to the past or because of a fear of the future? Removing the things you no longer need may require you to let go of items from the past so you can enjoy the present and focus on building the future you desire. And while you may be afraid of eliminating too many things from your house, it will rarely feel that way. Ask yourself these questions. Will I ever use this book to learn Spanish? Will I listen to these old CDs again? Will I use that guitar? Each time you look at an object and decide to keep it or throw it away, you're forced to think about what really matters to you. By choosing what you want to own, you choose how you want to live your life, the values you want to live by, and the items you really cherish. In short, decluttering your house allows you to remove all the things that have weighed you down for too many years. And as you remove the clutter from your life, you can gain clarity regarding what you want to do. You can also become more present and feel more motivated to move toward your goals. As the saying goes, what you own ends up owning you. If this is true, which items do you want to be owned by? The items you love and the ones that reflect your interests, values, and personality, or the boring items you no longer have any use for? Additional tip. To help you decide whether you should keep something or throw it away, ask yourself why you have that particular item in the first place. When did you buy it, and what purpose has it played so far in your life? Now, reassess its purpose. If it has already served its purpose, it might be time to remove it from your life. To learn in more detail how to tidy up your environment, I encourage you to refer to The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Exercise. Declutter your physical environment. Complete the exercises in the corresponding section of your action guide. G. Revise your forecast. Are you overwhelmed and feeling as though you aren't doing enough? Have you ever considered that you may simply be miscalculating the amount of time you need to complete your tasks? In general, humans do a terrible job at forecasting. We overestimate what we can accomplish in a year and largely underestimate what we can accomplish in a decade. When we set goals, we tend to have unrealistic expectations, failing to consider worst-case scenarios and unexpected events. While being optimistic is important, when it comes to planning, a healthy dose of realism is often necessary. A rule of thumb I like to use is simply to double the time I think I will need to complete a task. As a result, it rarely takes more time than I expect to complete a task, which makes me feel more productive and in greater control of my day. Consequently, if you tend to feel overwhelmed or never have enough time to finish your work, I encourage you to double the time you give yourself to finish your tasks. Try this method and see what happens during the day and how you feel at the end of it. What you may realize is that inaccurate forecasting can create unnecessary stress and impact negatively on your self-esteem. You'll probably discover that merely by giving yourself more time, you'll accomplish the same amount of work, if not more, and will feel much better about yourself. H. Take enough breaks. Are you working nonstop from morning to night without taking enough breaks? After all, you need to hustle, right? While you may believe that every minute counts and that the fewer breaks you take, the more productive you'll be, studies actually show this is not the case. In fact, high achievers take regular breaks as part of their strategy to perform at the highest level. Brendon Burchard, the best-selling author of High Performance Habits, takes breaks very seriously and recommends his clients to take a break from work every 45 to 60 minutes. If your butt lands in a chair, then set a 50-minute timer on your phone or computer. At 50 minutes, no matter what you're working on, stand up, move, breathe, set an intention, and then return to work. What about you? How often should you take breaks? Below are the techniques considered to be the most effective. Every 75 to 90 minutes. Robert Posen, author of Extreme Productivity, Boost Your Results, Reduce Your Hours, encourages people to take a break every 75 to 90 minutes. This is because it is difficult to remain focused for more than 90 minutes at a time. Every 52 minutes. The startup, Drogium Group, ran an experiment and found that the most productive people took frequent breaks working 52 minutes and taking 17-minute breaks. While they may seem like long breaks, in reality, if you can remain focused for 52 minutes, you will be more effective at work and your breaks will be well-deserved. Every 25 minutes. This is called the Pomodoro technique. The idea is to work 25 minutes and take 5-minute breaks every half hour. Now, which method should you use? This depends. The only way to know which one works best for you is to try them out. I encourage you to test each method for a week and see which one works best for you. Note that it may also depend on the tasks you perform. For instance, for a task that requires a great deal of creativity, perhaps working in blocks of 75 to 90 minutes might work best as it gives you more time to enter the flow. Alternatively, for tasks that require less or minimal concentration, working in blocks of 25 minutes might be more effective.